Day after tomorrow, gentlemen, we'll be in Las Vegas.
Welcome to Vegas.
Las Vegas functions on a 24-hour-a-day schedule.
The pools, the casino.
Big volcano out in front.
That's the Eiffel Tower.
Bellagio.
Riviera.
The Mirage.
Flamingo. Sahara.
The MGM Grand.
This isn't the real Caesar's Palace, is it?
I want to gamble.
They always put the machines that pay off the most right in the front.
Good luck.
The Strip is just the most amazing stretch of road, I think, probably anywhere in the world.
Kicking ass in Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
Vegas, baby.
Welcome to Las Vegas.
Architecturally, the Vegas Strip is the most unique city in the world. With luxury hotels sharing space with a medieval castle, a pyramid, and various other themes, there truly is no place like Las Vegas. But that's just what came to fruition. That doesn't take into account the Vegas that could have been. From approved projects that never saw the light of day, to some pretty unique concepts that barely made it off the drawing board, this is what we're calling Lost Vegas. This week, we'll be discussing the Royal Nevada. Nothing special is probably a very good way to describe the Royal Nevada. Not that it wasn't nice or well located, it just wasn't memorable. Think Monte Carlo, Vegas, and its luxury on a budget theme. Mix that with the opening of four new Vegas properties in 1955, and the answer to the question is yes, Vegas was overbuilt. The Royal Nevada was originally proposed as the Sunrise Hotel, a $2.5 million project with a 200-room resort that would be located on the Strip just north of the Last Frontier. In March of 1953, Frank Fishman and partners applied for a gaming license, despite three of the stockholders being previously declared unacceptable candidates. Eventually, Fishman bought out his partners and would retain ownership in the property, but leased out casino operations to a management group that could get a gaming license. By the end of 1953, the project was renamed the Royal Nevada. Construction on the project began December of 1953. Contributing to Vegas' shameful past, the architect hired to build the Royal Nevada was African-American Paul Williams. And once it was finished, he wasn't allowed inside because of his race. Attempting to trade in on the 1950s trend of historical fantasy, popular in movies at the time, the Royal Nevada theme was intended to be reminiscent of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. The casino carpet had patterns of spilling gems, including diamonds, emeralds, and sapphires. At the center of the exterior frontage stood a gold leaf crown marquee, roughly the size of an automobile, surrounded by the word Royal on one side and Nevada on the other. Just below it was a neon sign resembling a fountain, representing the property's signature attraction. Additionally, the property had a companion street sign with the crown on top of it, similar to the Thunderbird signage setup. Additionally, the property had a companion street sign with a crown on top of it, similar to the Thunderbird signage setup. While it has become an icon of Las Vegas, the Fountains of Bellagio is not an original idea. It's not even the first attraction that existed on the Strip. That honor goes to the Royal Nevada and its Dancing Waters attraction at their pool. It became a must-see Vegas attraction, April 19th, 1955.
We hope you've enjoyed this premium content preview. For access to the rest of this episode, as well as all the premium content we offer, go to patreon.com/360Vegas. A monthly subscription will give you access to the enhanced version of the podcast, often with bonus content, exclusive podcasts like 360 Vintage Vegas, 360 Origins, 360 Vegas Movies, insider information on all things 360 Vegas, 360 Vegas Vacation, and early access to everything. To subscribe, simply go to patreon.com/360Vegas. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Or you can find a link to Patreon on our blog, 360VegasPodcast.com.